Hi, this is Paul Bates of GreatDad.com, the site for fathers because dads don't always think like moms. And I'm really interested today to have a guest to talk to us about not only college, getting into colleges, but also how to financially afford colleges. So welcome, Dr. Cooney Beasley.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
This is a subject that's really close to me because I just sent my son off to for his freshman year last year. My daughter is graduating from college and we went through this whole process. And we were not lucky to have an advisor like you helping consult us. And so I think we're going to probably talk about some of the misconceptions that a lot of parents, including us, had going into it and what your services are and how you help parents.
Good.
So yeah,
there's a lot of misconceptions out there. A lot of the things that we have to do is deprogram parents and students. They have this pie in the sky type thing, and so we have to work with them and give them some realistic goals. And then sometimes you have people, undiscovered gems. We had a student a couple of years ago from California. He was headed to community college and we got a hold of him and explained to mom the opportunities he had. He ended up getting over $1 million in scholarship offers, 16 full scholarship offers.
Wow. That is really incredible.
Sometimes you can dig those up.
So you've been working in this area for 40 years, helping people not only get in, but also pay for it. I'm sure that it's just changed radically during those 40 years, or maybe in some ways it hasn't.
Well, there are some things that changed and some things haven't. The cost of college has gone up astronomically, and college debt right now is teetering at about $2 trillion.
Wow.
Okay, and then we got to put that into perspective. There's more college debt than there is credit card debt, automobile loans. It's bigger than the entire national debt of Canada and twice the national debt of Greece.
Wow.
And most kids taking loans today will not be able to pay them off in their lifetime.
Wow. So I guess that's the first question, at least for me, is should, with the amount of money that there is for scholarships, grants, other options like community college or military service, is there any reason why a kid who's capable shouldn't be able to go to college? I mean, is it always affordable in some way, shape, or form?
Yes, it's always affordable in some way, shape, and form. There are ways of going about it. I list five ways of paying for college, okay? And we use the acronym MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y. One is merit money. This is athletic, academic. Now, most people don't know. They think that all scholarships are based on income. No, there's merit money for artists. In fact, I just had a girl graduate from UCLA, and she had a theater costuming full scholarship. So there's money that's out there. So we look at merit money. Then there's what we call opportunity money. Some of the things that you need to do in order to get money. That's, for example, your employer may help pay for college. That is getting an ROTC scholarship, which is probably the best scholarship a student can get. Then we have need-based money, which is based on the difference between what they expect you to pay and what it costs to go to college. Now, need-based does not mean needy, okay? Mm-hmm. I had my wife and two daughters in college at the same time. My college bill, this is 12 years ago, was $72,000 a year. They said I could pay for 36 of that, but I qualified for $36,000, an additional $36,000 in need-based aid. Everybody got a Pell Grant. Okay, so there's ways of understanding the system. Okay, then there's what's called entitlement money. That's number four. There are certain things. Well, every U.S. citizen and legal resident is entitled to some form of federal aid. Most people think, oh, I'm not going to fill out the FAFSA because I make too much money. Well, no, there's some type of federal aid that you're able to get. And there's, you know, entitlement is like in-state tuition. Other entitlements is like, for example, in Texas, where I am, Texas and Louisiana have a reciprocity agreement. So Texas students can go to Louisiana and pay in-state in Louisiana. Same thing in Arkansas. So you have a lot of reciprocity agreements. So we look at entitlements. And plus, it goes in the GI Bill and things like that. And then finally, your own money. There are some people that are just going to pay it out of hide. And there's a way of paying for it out of hide without any stitches.
Yeah.
Okay, I've had plenty of people go through and figure out a way that it's not going to kill them to put their kid through college. So there's all kinds of different ways.
Okay. And we know that a lot of the more expensive schools are financed in large part by the people who pay full tuition and the ones who get early admit. And I mean, that's kind of isn't that kind of an advantage of being wealthier?
Yes and no. When your bigger college, for example, Harvard could admit everybody and let them all go free because of their endowment. Okay. And you have a lot of colleges that have very generous need-based programs. Harvard has one, Princeton has one, Stanford, Rice. They're very generous in the sense that, you know, I think it's about 80,000. If your adjusted gross income is below 80,000, they will comp you everything, tuition fees, room and board. And I think the cutoff is 150,000 for tuition. and then they scale it from there. Very few people go to Harvard pay full rate.
So if you have, so for the needs-based people, if they go early admit, I mean, this might be new to a lot of people who are listening, but most schools have two, they have the general pool of applicants, and then they usually have an early admit one and early admit two, or early decision one and two.
A lot of people think that you will have an advantage by going early decision or early action. Okay. That is a false impression.
Okay.
They are not going to take a lower qualified student because the student applied earlier. Okay. That you have, and this is where you're getting into technicalities. Okay. You have what we call watermarks. Okay. Now, if they set a watermark for early decision, early action, if a kid is above this watermark, more likely they're going to get approved for early decision, early action. If you're below, you're going to drop down to the next level. Okay. And then finally, you know, and they'll either say you're not accepted for early action, early decision. We're going to put you in the common pool. And then they'll work their watermark from there. And their watermark in the common pool is based on essentially the mean of what they bring in to that pool. So, you know, the advantage, I mean, this is something I've just gone through in the last 3 weeks, is people saying, I've got to submit my application right after the application is open. It's going to give me an advantage. No, they're not going to take a higher qualified student because he put his application in 4 weeks after you did. No, they're going to hold on to these things, and they're all looking for the higher qualified students. So that's a myth.
Right. Okay. But is it true, though, that other than needs-based, that it's really very difficult to get money if you go for
early action? Not difficult at all. Not difficult. Let's say we have a strategy. For example, if I've got highly qualified students, okay, if any of my students have a 32 ACT and a 3.5, we have a series of colleges we automatically apply to. University of Alabama, 32 ACT and a 3.5 GPA, automatically, $112,000 scholarship, automatically.
Wow.
Okay. So what we do is we have these, what we call long hanging fruit. We want to get, when you're playing spades, you want to get all the children off the street. What we do is we'll stack them up with about five scholarships coming in that if they're qualified for it. Now this kid is in a negotiating position with other colleges,
right,
sitting on, maybe $500,000 of scholarships they can negotiate. And so we place them in that position. And, you know, they've got these scholarships, Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana. There's a lot of colleges it's simply on what we call metrics. 85% of the colleges in the country will admit you and scholarship you on metrics alone, your class rank, your GPA, your test scores.
Right.
So we get those and we wrap those up first, and our kids are in position to be competitive because they've already got full scholarships in their back pocket. We're batting 96% full scholarships since 2011.
Wow. So I think a lot of people maybe get blind. They're blinded by the fact that they're only focusing on a certain number of schools that are named brands and don't look at these other, all the other options.
Yeah, there's a lot of options there, and the people are looking at the name brands, but people don't realize, for example, that I have a list of what we call my secret hidden colleges that in that industry would be like the West Point of being in the Army. Okay, for example, Webb Institute on Long Island. It's probably arguably the most exclusive school in the country. They only take 28 students a year. Okay, you major in naval architecture and marine engineering, and if you get in, it's free. I've got two students there right now. And so there's, and they go into that industry. And by the way, that is the highest paying exiting industry for college students. They're averaging $160,000 to $200,000 initial job.
Wow. And that's such a great subject to talk about, too, is the fact that now more and more parents and students are looking at the ROI on investment in college. Are you going to get a job right out of school?
Very few colleges, if you're taking out loans or the more expensive colleges, you'll never meet ROI. Never.
Right.
Okay. That's why we have an ROI chart we show them, and we say over here on the far left, that's your military academies and the schools that accept ROTC scholarships. You're getting huge 1,500% ROI. If you get any schools over here, you're in a negative 200% ROI. You're going to be paying for that. You're going to be paying for that school out of your life insurance policy. Yeah,
because there's other ways of defining that ROI too, but I guess that's
a difference. Well, there's not been a single study that says if you go to a higher profile school and take out loans to go to this higher profile school, that somehow it's going to amortize itself over time. It's not. The Kruger study was started in 1972. Now, we do a lot of research. I subscribe to about 12 research services. The Kruger study that started in 1972, they did a 40-year longitudinal study. They took the people who had got accepted at Harvard, tracked the ones who went to Harvard, and tracked the ones who didn't go to Harvard. And after 40 years, no significant difference in success, no significant difference in income or anything like that. Okay. There is no single study that says if you go to a higher profile school that somehow you're going to be better in life. There are certain micro niches. For example, if you want to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, it's probably good to Harvard, Yale, something like that. But beyond that, you know, Johnny Cochran, who defended O.J. Simpson, went to a podunk law school. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people put a lot of value on curb appeal and sticker price, things like that. But most of that does not amortize itself over time. It won't pay you back. I mean, I had a case where I had a girl that went to the University of Portland, which is a private school, as opposed to Portland State, which is a public school. We added everything up. She wanted to be a nurse. Okay, nursing degree is a nursing degree. It's a commodity. Okay, so right. She was going to have to pay $2,000 a month for 30 years to pay back her University of Portland loan. And I said, nobody is going to go to you and say, because you went to the University of Portland versus Portland State and you got the same nursing program, that we're going to pay you $2,000 a month more. No. Okay. Right. So, you know, there's some there's strategies and stuff that are involved in how to handle these things. And most people have no idea.
Is there a number that you understand that would be, that would achieve an ROI? If you said, if you wanted to define the amount of money somebody should pay maximum for a college degree for a financial ROI, how much would that tuition be?
Financial ROI would be $120,000.
For the
full 4 years, that's you'll probably level out an ROI. After when you're 62, you'll break even.
Right. And for the premium schools, those schools are going for about $320,000.
Yeah, $320,000. I'm waiting for somebody to show me. There's not one article out there that's proven this. And, you know, and having done this for 40 years, I've not seen it. I do see people. I'll tell them, don't go to this school. Don't take these loans out. 4 or 5 years later, they call me up. Dr. Beasley, what do we do now? It says, make sure you make your payments. Okay. You cannot declare bankruptcy to get out of these. And they have first dibs on your life insurance if you broke.
This is such an important topic because it's been in the news. I don't know if this is the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. You hear a lot about the fact that, as you say, for some of these professions, like Supreme Court Justice, there are a handful, a dozen schools that are considered the feeder schools and have absolute power in those domains. But for the vast majority of us, whether we go to community college or one of the other top tier schools that everybody know the name of, there isn't going to be the financial ROI that people are expecting.
Yeah, it all depends on how you play it. I mean, for example, I don't know if they shared it with you, but my wife, when I met her, was a high school dropout. Okay. And 2014, she graduated from Harvard University with honors. My total cost of Harvard was $22,000 out of pocket. Okay. I put her and her two daughters through college for less than $30,000.
Wow.
Now, I played the system and I used the financial aid program, and she transferred to Harvard from community college and got a transfer scholarship, the Phi Theta Kappa scholarship. I paid $597 her first semester at Harvard.
So that's also another interesting angle, the whole idea of going to community college, which is relatively very cheap. When we always, at least I hear a lot of the stories where kids go for 2 years, maybe they didn't have a great GPA getting out of high school. They went to the community college, or maybe it was money related. They went to community college. How good does their record have to be in community college to make that huge leap, as your wife did, to then to Harvard? They have to have 4.0?
No, you need a 3.5. to make a good transfer. A lot of colleges have transfer scholarships. The youngest daughter had a transfer scholarship from community college to Texas Tech. She got the presidential scholarship as a transfer student. And my wife's got what's called the Phi Theta Kappa. If you have a 3.5 or higher, you're inducted in Phi Theta Kappa, which is the Junior College Honor Society. And there are dozens and dozens of colleges that provide scholarships for people who are in Phi Theta Kappa. Southern Methodist University, very expensive school, offers a full ride to the top Phi Theta Kappa graduate at Collin County Community College.
Wow.
And then my wife's diploma doesn't have an asterisk at the bottom that says went to Collin County Community College. It says Harvard University. She went through graduation, walked across the stage, the whole enchilada.
Yeah. My wife did not quite that same thing, but she transferred from, I don't know what tier you'd say, but to a higher tier after two years. And it was a great upgrade. And a lot of people don't think of that. Why do you think it is that people don't investigate these other options? Is it all about status that somebody would?
I don't think it has status. It goes back to ignorance.
Yeah.
And it's not so much the people's ignorance. It has to do with your high school counselors. They don't know. They fundamentally don't know. I used to speak at the Texas High School Counselors Conference in Galveston every year, and I stopped. Well, they stopped me about 6 years ago because I did something simple. In my class, I said, okay, name the Ivy League colleges. And we were in a room with 40 people, half of them had doctoral degrees. Nobody could name the Ivy League colleges until some lady Googled it on her phone. Now, these are your high school counselors. It's like going to a doctor and he can't name the arm, the bones in the forearm. Right? and most people don't know. Most of the people out there who call themselves college something, you know, in the profession out there, most of them sell insurance. 60% of them sell insurance. They don't, you know, I had a little test that I gave to people. Says, have the guy take this test. And if he misses anything, you don't want to work with him. You know, a lot of them have no idea. They're just in the business of helping you set up your loans or get you to refinance your house or do or play some stupid game to pay for college or take loans out. They really are not, you know, they're not the brain surgeons in this. There's only a handful of us. I'm going to say there's about 25 of us in the country who can really do high level brain surgery in this and understand this. Rest of the people out there, at best, are dilettantes. And I hate to say it this way, but that's the truth.
Yeah,
don't know what they're doing. They think they know, but they don't. High on the Dunning-Kruger effect. Okay?
Well, they're also incentivized by the maximum number of acceptances they can give, and they're trying to deliver as many kids to college. So aren't they kind of evaluated on different metrics?
I don't know how they're evaluated. I mean, I've had some really horror stories. I mean, I took on a school district, a Title I school district in South Texas. You know, Title I, you're familiar? They're below the poverty level. Okay. And I said, okay, I'll do it on my own nickel. I'm going to take 100 of your students on the free lunch program, and I'm going to work with them for a year. And my job is to get at least 70 of them into college on fully paid. Okay. Wow. Now, after a year, we got all 100 of them on fully paid for college in Texas, going to state schools. All 100, each of them were accepted to at least two colleges, 1 to 7. Okay. And the school refused to tell the students that they had received it. Wow. They just stopped it. Superintendent said, no, I'm going, what is going on here? And I found out later, he was afraid that if he announced that these kids had all gotten these full rides to college, that there would be pitchforks and torches because other parents would say, how come my kid was not in the program? And I found out later from one of the people who quit that school and went to another school is that the counselors didn't want to do the work required to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the potential is there. There's all kinds of ways. I mean, in the state of Texas, if your income is below a certain level, you go to that particular high college for free. And we're running him in down here in the Rio Grande Valley. It's over 90,000. If your AGI is less than 90,000, they waive tuition.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So there's all kinds of ways.
I know the pitchforks come out also during this process between the kids, between the families who did not use an advisor or consultant like mm-hmm. you do, your job is versus those who just stayed with the high school counselor.
Yeah.
It was a really hard wake-up call for us. We thought that the job that you do was mostly to help kids who can't communicate with their parents and struggle through the application process. And we get along with our kids fine. We can help them out. They hit all the deadlines and everything. But afterwards, we found out all this, kind of all the secrets, the tricks and everything that people who had hired a counselor, a consultant were getting versus our high school advisors. Is that common?
That's good. Well, see, the high school advisors are not trained in this. It's not their job to get you into college, really. It's their job to get you out the door in May. And so they're not trained in this. They themselves, most of them are still paying off their student loans. So how do they know how to do this? Okay.
Right.
You know, on the other hand, you know, good old Dr. Beasley, I went to college 22 years, 2 doctoral degrees. I paid for one semester. And so, you know, I can practice what I preach. And in fact, I was already keyed up to either go to law school or med school after this. And I already had it fully paid. And the then wife decided, no, you're in no more school for you.
Well, I think that is such a fascinating thing, is there's just the relative value of these degrees and the fact that, as you said, nursing is a really great example that wherever you went, if you passed the boards, you're a nurse and they don't really look whether you went to that school.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, look at your doctors. I mean, you have a family doctor. Where did you go to college?
No idea.
Okay. Did you pick them based on where you went to college?
No, but I always look for board certification.
Board certification is right. But 30% of the doctors coming in practicing nowadays got their degrees overseas.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, the college that had the highest first-time pass rate in the medical boards was St. George's in Grenada.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, two of my doctors, you know, one got his degree in Vietnam, one got his degree in China. And so, you know, a lot of people try to put a lot of value saying they've got to go to a top med school. They got to go to this, that. No. Okay. Because they all have to take the same board, and nobody's going to pay you more because you went to Johns Hopkins versus Monterey in Mexico. and understanding things. Because I do medical school admission. I got 4 students right now doing medical school admissions. Mm-hmm. I do law school admissions. I'm working with 3 people going into graduate programs. So I work the whole gamut of getting people where they need to be. I do military academies. I just had a student graduate from the Merchant Marine Academy, which most people don't even know is a federal academy. And so, you know, I go across the board and, you know, because I've been doing this for 40 years. I've probably put 3 or 4 dozen kids through the military academies, probably 40 or 50 through the Ivy Leagues. In fact, I just had an Ivy Leaguer. One of the kids I put in the Ivy League at Cornell just got the gold congressional award from his congressman. And that's part of the package that we do is we get them into these programs where they get recognition.
Wow.
So, you know, because, for example, in the congressional award process, I had a homeschooler. I mean, believe it or not, I work with a lot of homeschoolers. I put homeschoolers in the Ivy Leagues, homeschoolers in the military academies. People say, you know, then you'd never get a homeschooler in the military. I had 2 brothers go to the military academies. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I had a homeschooler in upstate New York, and he worked through the congressional award. Otherwise, he got good grades, good test scores, and his congressman awarded him his gold medal and asked him where he was going to college, and he says, I'm trying to get into Cornell. The congressman happened to be a Cornell alum. Huh. Wrote him a letter, and that's the hump that got him in.
Wow.
Okay, and he got into Cornell. So there's all kinds of things that we have to do because we got to package the kid that make the kid look good. We want them to get, you know, national level awards, President's Volunteer Service Award, get into Boise State. There's a whole packaging process that we go through in order to push the kid to the front of the line and get him up on the stool.
So
not simple tests, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, that's a good question too. Is how much is testing? Like, if you had a kid who has let's say a 4.0 GPA, doesn't do well on testing, would you skip the test or try to do the test anyway? Since a lot of schools are test optional.
Okay, test optional is out there. People think I can blow it off. Okay, the statistics. You have a thing called the Common Data Set. This is the data that every year the colleges provide as public information so that they know, people can sit there and figure it out. So I subscribe to the Common Data Set. Now, this is what the data says. If you have a good test score that gets into the middle band or higher from that particular college, you have a half again better chance of being admitted than somebody who doesn't have a test score. So, in most situations, it's always good to have a high test score and to submit it. A lot of people think, I'll go test optional, I can blow it off. And this has been a boon to a lot of highly competitive colleges who are able to bring down their acceptance rate because they've doubled the number of people who are applying. I mean, I think it was Princeton said that we raised $7 million more dollars just in the cost of applying and their fees because so many people are now applying on a wing and a prayer thinking that maybe I'll get in without my scores. Well, all this is doing is giving money to the admissions office because, you know, the standards are pretty much the same, except their stats go down because they've doubled the number of people that have applied.
That is a scandal.
Yeah. And so, again, I have to deprogram people about this because they're listening to their friends. Chicken licking said, cocky locky said, loosey goosey said. And you've got sincere friends, good, well-meaning, sincere friends who most of the time are sincerely wrong.
Right.
You know? And you got parents who say, well, I went to Jody's mom. Jody got into Harvard. I went to talk to her, and she told me everything I needed to do to get into Harvard. And I said, how long did you talk to her? Oh, we talked about 5 minutes. And I'm going, well, takes about 5 minutes to learn everything. If it took 5 minutes, I'd bottle it and sell it. You know, it's not 5 minutes.
So another question that maybe is the very time appropriate is, I know there was a whole backlog and a lot of things changed during COVID. There's a bunch of kids who opted out and then came back, flooded the market last year, maybe the year before. Have we now seen the end of that COVID effect on applications, do you think?
No.
No?
Because you still have the test optional effect. And the colleges are going to keep the test optional effect in there because it increases demand. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're still going to get a higher level of people who otherwise would not be qualified, who are going to apply on a wing and a prayer. And as long as they keep the test optional, they're still going to have the number of wing and prayer hopefuls, you know, cross myself and maybe God will get me in. And that effect will still stay there. Every advantage to the college making more money because of COVID, they're not going to relinquish that. It's like there's no sundown rule for that. So we're going to have to work within these COVID constraints that we have. And, you know, the thing is with my organization, we've been online since, you know, the 90s. And so, you know, when a lot of people who do face-to-face, we were already online. So we weren't affected. In fact, our business went up during COVID because we could do things online. All of our training programs, everything are online.
Okay.
So, but this is going to stay with us. It's not the urgency is over. But all the things that are in place that benefited the college to make more money, they're not going to leave.
Yeah, there seems to be a big profit thing going on here that we think of these as public institutions or non-profit, but there's a lot of money in this business.
Yeah, they make a lot of money. I mean, just because they're non-profit means they're not giving money to people and institutions, and they're not paying dividends. But I mean, you know, Harvard's got this endowment that, you know, gazillion-dollar endowments, and you know, there's just ways that, you know, it's having to understand this landscape. And most people have no grasp of the landscape. They think they know real high value Dunning-Kruger effect of, you know, they have a great deal of confidence in their ignorance. And again, we have to deprogram people. And there are some people who refuse to be deprogrammed. They still have maps that say the world's flat, and they're sticking to it. And they got satellite photographs that the world's flat. You know? So you can't convince some of them. And, you know, because when we work with us, they generally, we're looking for what they pay us. And what they get from us, we're looking at a 500 to 1,000% ROI, just what they pay us. Our average scholarship that a student takes is $100,000. Okay. Generally, it costs them between $8,000 and $12,000 to hire us. And so that's a pretty good ROI. That's how I approach this. I says, look at your ROI. Somebody's going to have to pay this $120,000, $130,000 for you to go to college. You can take it out in loans. You can try to get a scholarship, or you know, you can hire us and we'll take care of it. Now, that's not it's not everybody. We can't do this for everybody. Okay. Right. Kid walks in with a 2.2 GPA and, you know, an 820 SAT score and said, get my kid into Harvard on a full scholarship. No, the only time you're going to Harvard is as a tourist. You know, it's not going to happen. You got to have realistic goals.
Well, I think that's what scares everybody away from using consultants like you, is that the cost is pretty high up front. But do you think you're alone in promising an ROI on that investment?
That's how we bottle ourselves, is, you know, we're an investment. You know, we're going to save you money. There's a lot of people out there who won't say that because they can't. They're what we call loan arrangers. They just set you up for loans, something that you could do yourself, but people don't understand that. So they're going to trust somebody to fill out the loan for them. I mean, I got a horror story for you. I had an office in a building, and there were three other people on that same floor who were loan arrangers. They didn't have college degrees, but they were doing this college funding stuff, sold insurance and would have you refinance your house, things like that. Anyway, I was in the boardroom holding my presentation to potential clients, and this guy walks in, sits at my presentation, and he was supposed to meet one of these loan arrangers. So anyway, the loan arranger comes in, pulls him out of my meeting, goes over the stuff with him. The guy comes back to me. And, you know, he said, well, this guy was, you know, telling my daughter, their parents really love you because they're willing to take out loans for your college. And I said, yeah, you come over here. So I sat him down. I took my laptop out. I showed him. I said, you sign with me. I guarantee you a full spot scholarship for your kid, or I'll give you your money back. Because she had the metrics. She had the numbers, the GPA, the test scores. And so she got two full scholarships, one to Alabama, one to University of Texas at Dallas, you know, within 3 weeks. Because these loan arrangers had no idea. And so, of course, you know, those are low hanging fruit, because if somebody comes to me with the metrics, it's easy to place them.
Yeah.
Then those who don't, we work on them getting the metrics.
Right. So you have a website, BeasleyCollegePrep.com, and that's BEASLEY CollegePrep.com. If people can, all over the country, can work with you, despite the fact that you're in Texas, I imagine.
Right. I mean, I have right now clients in Cambodia, Hong Kong, North Vietnam, Namibia, South Korea, Canada.
So if somebody were trying to find somebody local, or you were too busy or whatever, what advice would you give other parents for finding somebody who has their finger on the pulse the way
I'm not going to send anybody to people I don't know. I mean, we're pretty good. We got a good staff. These people know more than most people. There are a couple of other good people out there. Unfortunately, they charge a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
And they're good. I mean, in the upper echelon of this, you got some superstars.
Right.
And our program, we've got the flexibility to expand. We could handle at this time probably 150 clients right now, because we use group coaching. And so we can handle about 150. And so, and you know, we got a couple of slots left open. Anybody wants to join, that's fine. But about 150. So I don't have enough confidence in some of these other people that are out there to say, you need to go to these people.
I wasn't looking for a specific recommendation, but just like any things that you would really look at, what questions you would ask to even know whether the person is competent.
I got a good question. Okay. What percentage of the parent's assets are counted on the FAFSA against the student? Just ask that question. If they can't answer that, then they don't know what they're doing. It's like asking, what's a basal body temperature? You know, it's just, it's most people wouldn't know that because they haven't done the finance. Because we, in our program, we review the FAFSAs. We look at every application before it goes out. We have a very intense test prep program. I mean, my test prep program has been previously was used by the University of Arkansas, and they sold it to 22 states. We've had people jump their scores. I had one kid over Christmas break jump his SAT score 400 points. I had one kid end up going to the Air Force Academy, jump his ACT 10 points in 6 weeks.
Wow.
So we know how to beat the test. I mean, the people at the College Board know who I am. They don't like the fact that I teach people how to beat the test. I've had the seventh grader score in 90th percentile in SAT and ACT because we taught them how to beat the test. The test can be beaten. Even the new one, the digital test, I've already got the paradigm up on how to beat it.
This is really fascinating. I really encourage everybody to take advantage. You do a free one-on-one consultation.
Yeah, free one-on-one, or we'll bring them to, or something like that. So, because if I get 100 people coming in and wanting, I won't be able to meet with all 100 of them in a week. Right. So we'll set up a webinar for them, and they can come to the webinar. We'll address questions and, see if they want to get on board.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. I think the biggest thing that I would recommend, having gone through this recently with two kids and making a lot of the mistakes that you're talking about, that because we were blinded by all these things, is don't take anything for granted. Don't take what you thought was true back when you went to school. Don't take what you hear from other parents. Don't necessarily take the advice of your your high school college counselors if you have them. You need to really dig in and hire somebody like you or do the research yourself, which may or may not even be possible because the whole thing is so complicated. And to some degree, in that parlance of today, it's kind of rigged in a lot of different ways with a lot of little tricks and turns.
Well, yeah. And there are people who say that they can go out and do the research themselves, and that's fine. The kid will have their kid will have grandkids for them by the time it's done, because this is not something that you can, another horror story. I had a CPA, he says he was an engineer, and he says, I'm an engineer, I can figure this out. And he couldn't figure it out. He comes to me 2 days before the deadline and says, my kid will work day and night to do this. And I said, it's too late. I mean, loaves and fishes, miracles I can do, but if you want me to raise the dead, you got to spot me the body. Okay. Like even today, I've got people who have an August 15th deadline. And they sent me their essay this morning.
Wow. Yeah. That's quick turnaround. Well, Cooney, this has been really a lot of great information. Thank you for being so generous with all these tips. So again, it's BeasleyCollegePrep.com. We'll put that in the show notes and take advantage of, any conversation you have with somebody as smart and as knowledgeable as you would really be helpful in just setting the tone.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I hope your folks benefit from this, and we're here to help.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Paul
Baines of GreatDad.com. I run a course on gratitude, which you can get to podcast listeners can get at GreatDad.com/gratitude. And I'll give it to you for $1 if you just put in the code podcast1. So until next time, keep on being the best father you can. Appreciate it.